Dear Venerable Sisters, Dhamma Friends, today also we are going to take time for the talk, the third one in the series. May you all settle down for the talk and give the consent with three times Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.
Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.
Namo tasse bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhasse. නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ කතංච භික්ඛවේ සංවරෝ හෝතිද භික්ඛු භික්ඛුනා රූපං දිස්වා පිය රූපේ රූපේ නාදි මුච්ඡති අප්පිය රූපේ රූපේන ව්‍යාපජ්ජති උපට්ඨිත කායස්සතිච්ච විහෙරති තංච චේතෝ විමුක්තිං පඤ්ඤා විමුක්තිං යතා භූතං පජානාති තී Dear Venerable Sister, Dhamma Friends, we are proceeding along this particular sutta known as Chappanaka Sutta, whereby the Buddha give special instructions for people, those who have taken already one step like moral restraint, and how to maintain the already taken moral restraint and furtherance to the concentration restraint and the wisdom restraint. And the common example or civil example the Buddha give here is, whenever someone taken the first restraint like not to kill, not to steal, not to have a sexual misconduct, lying, slandering, tale carrying and harsh words, he other people recognize as a mendicant or a meditator, maybe a monk or nun or a novice. Whenever such a person met up with a normal man from the street, commoner, they look at him or look at her in a different way, because he or she knows this particular person is with this moral restraint. So his outlook or criticism view is specific because he has already taken the moral restraint. So he would say, the man from the street would say, your behavior in so and so, it is not up to a person like you, because you have been already taken the moral restraint. Or sometimes he may criticize in a harsh way, or sometimes he may phrase you in a good way, because we are also looking forward to be like that, but we find very difficult with our responsibilities and all the kind of thing. Likewise, that the criticism you are bound to receive whenever you are met up with the person is may be positive or negative. When such a thing happens, if your mind is get irritated or carried away by the phrase or blame, you are just like a person with wounds and pestering body creeping through a shrub jungle or thorny jungle. So whatever the movements you are doing, everywhere you get pricks. And that is a simile the Buddha is giving for you to see whether this is relevant to your own spiritual life and your own encounters with other people. And whenever such a thing happens, the Buddha takes the opportunity to highlight what are the way if you are not restrained, and what are the consequences if you are not restrained in the mind or concentration or the wisdom, and if you are wise enough, you will take it as a point for you to go further along this concentration restraint or wisdom restraint. So yesterday, we took an example, still you find in this particular discourse. Whenever you are met up with a visual object, according to our example, while you are walking, that's also somewhat like met up with another person. So whenever a visual object represented by its form or its color, we sometimes take delight if it is pleasant, and we become not happy, it is unpleasant. If that is so, you are accruing or accumulating unwanted volitional karmic forces, and you are just like a person with wounds and pestering wounds creeping through. Whatever you see, whatever you hear, whatever you contact with the nose, tongue or the body or the mind, everything make you disturb, and the stream of consciousness will be disturbed. So we reduce it to a walking meditation, looking or seeing a visual object. If you are to study this particular discourse, if time permits, we will go ahead with this furtherance. Talks and presence, whenever you are listening, whenever you are smelling, tasting, touching, thinking. And I just skipped into the next phase, where what will happen if you are developing a skillful restraint, your mind, that means concentration restraint, and the wisdom, then as an alternative or as a progress, what will happen? So that is the part related to the restraint only that I presented as the today's topic for the talk. It says, Kathancha bhikkave bhikkhu saṅvaro hoti, how he must restrain. What is the message? What is the way the Buddha recommend you as a person expecting a perfection or straightening of your correct view, and expect the liberation through your mind or through your wisdom? This must be the way you must follow. That is, ida bhikkave bhikkhu cakkhuna rupam dissva piya rupe rupena adimucchati. Whenever met up with the pleasurable shape or a color or form, you understand, now I am face to face with, avenued with a visual object, you are not going to take delight, you are not allowing that visual form to take you, to carry you or take you for a ride, and that must be your restraint. And equally, if the visual object you confronted with is unpleasant, there may be kind of a hatred arising. Under such circumstances, you can take your bodily posture as a pivotal point, as a reference point, as a neutral place, as a refuge, as an oasis in this desert walk, or as a pure state. So whenever the mind about to create pleasant and unpleasant feeling and attachment or hatred, knowing that you try to bring back your attention to your posture, which is neutral, and that you use your body as in a efficient way to reinstall your mindfulness. It is called satuppada, you bring the astray mind, wandering mind, back to your posture. So much so, you train yourself, restrain yourself, which is called resilience. Whenever the mind is affected by desire or craving or by hatred or irritation, how much time, how long will it take the mind to recover and come back? That is the way we can say how much he is developing his own career. If the mind is taken away by a hatred or desire and you lingering and continue to happen, it is a limited mind. It is called paritta chetasa. But if you know the tactic, you can understand, even though it started the journey to go from neutral to hate or from neutral to desire, you restrain in such a way, taking your body posture as the pivotal point, the neutral point, and ultimately you develop kind of the measureless kind of a mind or unassuming kind of a mind, non-judgmental kind of mind, and there you advance along this restraint, and that is the point where you can understand, you can reach in the sense liberation through the mind or liberation of the wisdom. So therefore, the mendicant or a meditator or a monk or a nun always try to make use this irritation, make use this eccentric nature, make use this distraction as another question paper or another exam, and never try to escape it, by to face it and see through this visual object or visual seeing phenomena, or through this developing hate or developing desire, still can at least occasionally bring back your attention to your bodily posture. If you are taking the walking situation, can you bring back the attention to your left leg, right leg, or tactile sensation of your body? So more and more you practice, you will understand. At the beginning, if you are not heard about this kind of a training, if you do not have any book knowledge, if you do not have any theoretical understand, it appear like impossible. But you are already now fairly successful in restraint regarding the morality or precepts. So therefore, you know what does it mean by restraint. And now if you are ready to take this challenge and to further, you may find it is very difficult at the beginning. But if you go prepared, if you have enough theoretical knowledge and strive through again and again when you are to apply, one day you may observe that you are not supposed to see visual object, but while walking, in the walking meditation, mind is run away, wander off, and stuck with something pleasurable or unpleasurable, and then you are entertaining it or hate, and meanwhile there is a sixth sense telling something wrong somewhere. That is to say, you are off the track, you are eccentric, and that aspect of your mind is already inbuilt. That's endowment or birthright of a human brain. So the moment you try to make use it and to bring back to your walking position is utterly 100% your own ways and means. There's no second person involved. There's no any other kind of influence from outside that you have to take that decision. That means you go prepared and you know you are now no more in the bodily tactile sensation, but you are in the visual object, and it is you are living on your eye sensitivity. So without much complaining yourself, without much take delight of going with this visual object, how diplomatically you can bring back the attention to your walking steps. It's a very adventurous thing. It is quite a challenge for a person with radical reflection. So I would like to draw another example, still from the canonical presentation. During the time of the Buddha, one day, the old person became a monk, and he is fed up with, and he knows enough of suffering of the samsara, and he find a solitude time where the Buddha is alone, and he go and pay respect and say, "Pante, I feel like go to a solitude and do away with the social activities, and with already arisen energy, wish to continue my meditation. Would you mind to give me a meditation instructions?" So then the Buddha gave a kind of a hint, and he, "You old crock, come and ask me all the time individual instructions. I have given enough. If you old people are coming and asking for like this in the individual, what will be the case with the youngsters? So therefore you must know how to be contented with the already given instructions like." So it's a standard case, I think, in the Buddha's asana. Don't care about these elderly people. But that's not the end of the picture. Then the Buddha takes this opportunity and asks, "Okay, I'll ask some questions. You may answer as you feel suitable." The Buddha is asking, "Yang kinchu rupang, adittang adittababba na passati na passisanti, dasate atti kamangwa, ragangwa, pemangwa." What do you think, Malunkiputta? His name is Malunkiputta. There is a visual form you have never seen, and you are not now looking at also. And it is not seeing also, and you will not see even in future. Will there be any opportunity such a form can create defilements in your stream of consciousness? I am repeating. What do you think, Palunkeputta? Suppose there is a visual object or shape or color you have never seen. Now you are not looking at that also, and it is not seeing also, and you will not see that kind of a form in time to come, future. Under such circumstances, will there be any kind of a infestation or defiling on your stream of consciousness? The Mahalunkiputta give a single word answer, "No, Bhante." There won't be. Then the Buddha is asking equally, think about a sound you have never heard. Now you are not listening, you are not hearing, and in time to come, in future, you will never hear such a sound. Will there be any opportunity for such a sound to create a trouble, irritation, defilement in your stream of consciousness? No. And then goes to the smelling, tasting, touching, and all. Then that gives a kind of a hint, anywhere, anytime your stream of consciousness to infested with defilement, it is here and now. Not the past, not the future. So if you can maintain the here and now, in this now, the present moment, you are enlightened. So I am telling you, as you answer, you know past and future thing can't create defilements, can't give a turmoil or turbulence to your stream of consciousness. So what about taking care about the present moment, not to defile. And if that is the case, that is my instruction for you. And the Malukya Buddha, he was so happy because he gave something sizable, something pragmatic, something verifiable task, even though he is too old. Then he says, Bhante, if I got the point correctly, this is the way I got it. Then he gave 12 stanzas, 6 if you are unrestrained, what will happen when you see visual object in the eye door, the ear door, the nose, tongue, body and the mind. And as he understand, what will happen if you restrain yourself, even in front of a visual object in the present moment, if you know, if you are skillful in restrain of your faculties, another 6. So this indicates a kind of a practical project of the way out for a person who already develops a certain amount of mindfulness. And therefore, after Venerable Malunkya Buddha is uttered and stated, the Buddha was so happy, Buddha repeating it the same with his own mouth. That is the way the Buddha appreciated. So this phrase, we took it as unrestrained, the way of unrestrained and the way of restraint is almost go parallel with this Malunkya Buddha Sutta. You can still find that in the Samyutta Nikaya, Salayatana Vagge. The Malunkya Buddha is telling, Rupandiswa sati mutta bhyanimittam anishakaroti. Whenever you confronted with a visual object, avenued with the visual object, but sati mutta, you are unmindful or absent-minded, Sārata citto vedeti tancha ajyosa tittati. If that particular object, visual object is pleasurable, you develop a desire and then you plunge into that. You entertain, you take delight, and that I would like to give little bit of explanation. When you keep on walking, left leg, right leg, left leg, right leg, for the first time when you develop the familiarity with the left leg and the right leg with the noting and continuous, of course there's a happiness, there's a kind of a victorious kind of a feeling. You could, now I can do, I know what is the mindfulness in walking, and that is there. But when you keep on doing, left leg, right leg, left leg, right leg, you can't understand, you won't feel, you won't trace, there's a kind of a monotony develops. Yes, yes, I am walking left leg, right leg, then what? Because it is monotonous. Under such circumstances, anything appear from the outside, appear like titillating, appear like jumping into like, and then without any prior notice, mind will jump into a visual thing and take delight in it. That is the way Venerable Malunkya Buddha is presenting his case. Tassa vaddanti vedana aneka rupa sambhava. And then you develop desirable or pleasurable feeling and proliferation. Think again and again of the visual object you see. And that is being explained. You take details of the particular object, visual object, and taste it in different ways. You see the shapes, do you see the manners, you see the evolution according to the time, every detail you catch it, and it add to this mental proliferation. Abhijjaca vyesaca cittamasupa hanyati. So if the visual object is bad, you will be again and again indulge or keep on with hateful feeling. If it is a pleasurable feeling, keep on developing in an accelerated way the desire, And more you go to the extremes of the hate or desire, your stream of consciousness become torturing, tortured, and burning, friction, unsatisfactoriness, but still, together with the habitual way of taking delight or taking hate, it keep on, and your whole stream of consciousness is succumbed to this suffering, and the unturbulent flow will be utterly in a turbulence, and that is it go evang achinato dukkhang. So this is the way you accumulate suffering, you accumulate friction, accumulate wear and tear, and arani banang uchati, you are far away from liberation through the mind or liberation through the wisdom. This is what happened in the uninstructed komana. And Mahalungiputta being an elderly person, he knows, because his first part of the life, second part of the life went without any meditation, any instruction, any mindfulness, any restraint. Now once the Buddha mentioned about the catalytic instruction, then he says, after development of the mindfulness with the help of this moral restraint, and if you go prepared with such bombarding visual objects or sounds, of course we have taken the visual objects as our example, then he explained, naso rajyatu rupesu rupandiswa patisato, he is not tends to take delight of the visual object, because he knows, as far as his stream of consciousness with the left leg and right leg, he is pure, unblemished, and he is in oasis, not in the desert. So naso rajyatu rupesu rupandiswa patisato, instead he knows, is mindful, now I am not on the leg, now I am not on the tactile sensation, but I am on my eye. I am seeing, I am a seer. I see the shape, or I see the color. So his mindfulness is still guarding him, is still protecting him, even though the track is being changed, even though it happened without his will or volitional this thing, he may one day understand, now I am no more with the leg, no more with the touching sensation or sensitivity of the leg, now I am with the eye. So that is called rupandiswa patissato. When that happens, of course it is an inbuilt character of the human mind. If you go prepared, and the day when you become successful, you can understand it is not a result of your meditation. It's an endowment. Whenever you change the track, mind knows. Only thing you introduced or restrained is, as far as the stream of consciousness, is it the left leg and right leg? I know. I can perceive the turbulentless flow, and it is with less amount of frustration, less amount of tension, less amount of defilement. And now immediately when it go to a seeing, you know now there's a turbulence, there's a potential possibility for defilements, and mind tends to rush from this neutral position to this defiled position. And the mindfulness that you have developed, understand the situation without judgmental, without telling you are bad, without a regret, without a negative feeling or inferiority. So that is the character one has to explore in one's mind. And if you deep plunge into that point, the mind, the capacity of the mind, of this choiceless awareness, somewhat going against the moral values in the life. Our mind take the morality, telling this is good, this is bad, this is gain, this is a lost kind of a... The value judgment is almost like a shadow of this awareness. But if you wish to go further, beyond moral restraint, and to go to the restraint of the mind, or concentration, or the wisdom, to understand up to a certain extent, listen carefully, up to a certain extent you must have morality. After a while, the morality itself become a limiting factor. It become a burden, and that is where religious activity stops. Religious people can't go beyond that. But if you are studying the Dhamma, the way the Buddha presented, you have to see through these religious values, or moral values, or ethical values, or judgmental values, or assuming way, can one understand under one's very nose. Now my mind is shifted from the neutral stream of consciousness to defiled stream of consciousness, but both I consider as mindfulness. Understand the undefiled stream of consciousness comparing it with the defiled stream of consciousness, mindfulness never take understanding of the undefiled consciousness is better than understanding or mindful on the defiled stream of consciousness. Or rather, to make it ironically, understanding your own stream of consciousness with defilement is much, much, much efficient. It's more meritorious. That is the point we usually get stuck. That's a bottleneck. So that may be your moral values, or your misunderstanding, or your religious feeling. And then if you can go further into that, you feel like even though mind is defiled, I just try to be mindful, that is not done. You must rush back to the undefiled state or neutral of this thing. That rushing, that frustration, or that kind of a negative thing, is the one here we have to consider. The way Venerable Malankaputta is telling, Rupandi Swapatisato. You know now you are no more in the leg, but you are in the seeing visual object, and that is not meditation, it is inferential knowledge. That is rational knowledge. That is kind of a comparison. The mind cannot take two objects at a time. Soon you know you are a seer, you are a person looking at something, and with the eye, theoretically you must understand, that means totally you have to forget about the touch sensation of the leg. That you can't verify, that you can't experience under your very nose. So therefore, jumping from one channel to the other means all the other channels are closed. Imagine if you have a television, and it has so much of channels, the basic potential of a not working the television is so much of channels. But once you open a channel, all the others are intentionally or unintentionally you cut off. By selecting one, you reject so much of possibilities. So whenever you become a specialist, subject matter specialist, you are dumb fellow to the rest of the world. That's what we do in our formal education. We become specialized. So it is, therefore it says that BS is a bullshit, MS is more shit, PhD means pile deep and high. Oh, Achan Brahm says permanent head damage. So here you become aware your potential whenever the mind is at home. But once it is gone to seeing, you can't feel the touch. And imagine that kind of inferential knowledge come and back you up, or rational knowledge coming and help you, it's utterly electric, utterly a coincidence. So how many times or how many occasions you have to go prepared and still trial and error, you fail, never mind, next time also you go. Imagine an occasion where you can aware, you can verify, now I am no more in the bodily tactile sensation, I am in seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, and that very understanding Buddha cannot help you. Your past merits cannot help you. Your theory knowledge on itself cannot help you. Even if you go prepared, it's a luck by chance. So Mahalukya Buddha is exactly, precisely, he says, Naso rajyatu rupesu rupandiso patisato. And Venerable Sariputta, he says, even if you are to note that mind is no more with my primary object, it is the secondary object, or astray, or wandering, or daydreaming, can you observe that and note it unshaken, without a regret, without worrying? That is what the restraint regarding the concentration and the wisdom. And it is rather to the wisdom. So that potential is there as far as you are a human being. But this kind of understanding red-handed under your very nose, I used to say, you are no more the same person. You know, without any prior notice, mind can jump. No control. And if you are not listened properly, if you are not using your rational knowledge and the inferential knowledge, if you have never experienced it under your very nose, each time mind jumps from the mainstream, you regret. You underestimate, you become inferior kind of, that is the bottleneck Venerable Sariputta is highlighting. Imagine without any kind of hesitation, you understand, earlier it was in my leg and tactile sensation, now it has jumped into seeing and I'm indulging in seeing and all that, never mind. Now my mindfulness never hindered, it can easily record, easily report, easily understand, it jumped without volition. So that is what it is, rupandhiswa patishyato. Viratta chitto vedeti, now he observed the, he see the characteristics may be on the visual object, but he do not take delight because he knows my refuge, my purity, my oasis is the leg or tactile sensation. Now it has taken away. So therefore, more and more you indulge it, that means more and more defilements, more and more turbulence, more and more infestation. So he look at it in such a way, seeing thing as a blind person. And you stop at seeing, not worrying, not indulging. This is the gist of this instructions. And viratta chitta ve tancha na josa tittati. You never be happy telling that I have seen a beautiful butterfly, I have seen a beautiful bird, I have seen a beautiful flower, like you never indulge it, but you know you are off the track. So much so, you are not plunging into that, take delight in that. Yatasa pasato rupan sevato chapi vedana. He says, even if you see a visual object, even if you know it is delightful or undelightful, it is liking and disliking, everything happen now. It happened, it's within a split second, kiyati no pachiyati, you never accumulate any kind of a defilement. Evan so charati sato, you understand the diversification of the mindfulness. Not it is happy with your primary object, even the other visual, other senses, other organs carry you away, take you away from the primary object, mindfulness still see it, mindfulness still report it unbiased way. And that is the mindfulness, that is the radical way of mindfulness, that is the diversification of the mind, and that's the beauty of the mindfulness. And that mindfulness is not the early stages of mindfulness, it is the faculty of mindfulness. This is called the power of mindfulness. The early mindfulness, what usually we call as bare attention, is you try to keep it one track, the walking, or rising and falling, or the breath. So that is the way you develop mindfulness, just like you are a learner to take a driving license, you take a solitude area without no much of people and the vehicle. So you learn driving the vehicle in the not in a busy street. And once you learn it, slowly, you have to understand this is good enough for training, but not enough for practical value. So you have to be a driver or a chauffeur. You have to learn how to drive the vehicle without hitting amidst of other vehicles and other road. You will be amazed to see, especially I am telling to the Australians, if you go to Sri Lanka, how the driving. And if you go to India, how is the driving? You are completely will carried away maybe, because our drivers are much, much, much skillful than you Australian drivers. You may not appreciate it telling that we are not abiding by rules and nothing. Slowly, government is introducing rules. But anyway, so this is the way mindfulness. Even though it is meant to run in this track, it jump into the other track without prior notice. And whenever it is goes, not only him, the other drivers also know this is Sri Lanka. They jump into the other without signals. So there's a beauty. There's a kind of a reason to be glad. So not only you are making a picnic, driving itself is a picnic. So I appreciate Buddha in this way. It's very boring to take the track and only driving, you feel sleepy. And if you are jumping without signal, even the right round drivers has to be very, very alert. So if you are going, you have to take not only international driving license, you have to take special license in Sri Lanka. So don't misunderstand me. That is the way when the mindfulness is diversifying, it jumps from the one channel to the other, but immediately it knows that very knowledge is not something bad. It's a knowledge on something bad, but the knowledge itself is not bad. That's the point Venerable the Malunka Buddha is telling. Imagine you have a bad trait. Imagine you have a bad habit. Imagine you have a cancer. Imagine you have that kind of a disease. The diagnosis of that bad habit or cancer is not a bad thing. Rather than hiding it, rather than escaping it. So this is the point you miss in this linear method of mindfulness. When the mindfulness is continuing, he is very clearly said, yathasa pasato rupam sevato chapi vedana. Even though he is without prior notice jumping into seeing, and even he knows the object is desirable or undesirable, he never accumulate any defilements because his mindfulness protects. So therefore, Upandita Sayadaw in Burma, He says, if you protect mindfulness, mindfulness in return will protect you. It is happening in automatical way. That is not happening at the moral restraint level. It is happening when it is advancing to the mind restraint or wisdom restraint, or we can say concentration restraint or wisdom restraint. Mindfulness is very adventurous. It is against the grain. It is not conventional, but very swift. Soon the mind takes the channel. Mindfulness itself is focusing the beam light or the searchlight and tell, now fellow is no more in the same track. It is changing from the posture to posture, object to object, and desire to hate, and that all thing will be, it is bookkeeping is there, accounts are kept. So as far as you have the bookkeeping, there is no chances for the defilements to accumulate and continue. Evam apachinato dukkha, that is the way he do away with possible defilements and the possible friction, possible the torturing, possible your mind, not even if it is change the track, you are not irritated. Instead, you develop hilarious feeling. Now my mindfulness is so swift, and it at least can keep the accounts of bookkeeping of this monkey mind, of this unruly mind, and not restraining, but wherever the monkey is jumping, you focus the searchlight, you give the beam, and there you can see the monkey. So that very understanding is called the noble quest or exploration of your own situation. And I would like to add some more. I would say it is not that you are learning about your mind. You are learning about the human mind. You are using your mind utmost and then understand this is how the human mind. So then onward you can understand people, those who have no any familiarity with mindfulness, those who have not taken even the moral restraint or ethical restraint, and the monkey mind jumping from the other, that particular person do not know how much defilements or how much uncontrollability, how much ungovernability of his or her mind, and instead he or she try to facilitate it or give fertilizer and food. You think your mind is for your well-being, mind is naturally for your compassion, for your loving kindness. Here only you will understand unruly mind is the worst enemy. And understand how much it is unruly is not a bad thing. I am repeating, the understanding that how much unruly my mind is not nihilistic, it is not negative, it's a turning point. So therefore, that itself must not be calculated for what happened past, or what is going to happen in future. What will happen, not me, but other people or other places. All are just useless thing. As far as this kind of a caliber is concerned, it must be here, now I am. And immediate your mind must be aware of its neutral object or primary object or main pivotal point or reference point, and then let the mind to run. And whenever it is running, you try to be aware. Can I be aware of it without regret, without attention, without a frustration? Venerable Sariputta says, yes. The Buddha says, yes. But our rational mind says, no. Impossible, because mind is so swift. But nothing like trying. Nothing like trying. Because we people already started our moral restraint. Next step is to look, go forward, do walking meditation, do it open-eyed. You feel like close your eyes, but then you won't get the maximum challenge. Go open-eyed, not along the same track. You have to turn around. When you are turning around, it's a vulnerable point. So you must go prepared. At the end, there may be accidents. So it is your duty to not to get damaged by go prepared, and soon it goes, soon the mind off the track, and you know that this is my appointed reference point, now mind is here. That very understanding is, it's a extraordinary help of your mindfulness, and don't look down it. And once you comes to know, now it is no more with the leg, it is so quickly it can come back to your leg. It's like a winking of your eyelids, so quickly. The Buddha says it won't take time. Moment you understand, now I am no more at home, no more at my neutral object, no more at my oasis, it is now I am in the desert and burning and torturing, immediately it comes. That is called akalika, without time. Because our mind is so quick, it is beyond time and space, it can come. Imagine, what you have seen is a neutral visual object. Instead of the desirable and undesirable, it never make a problem. Even if you see, you never consider it as seeing, because it's a neutral. So you see it's boring. For example, you are walking inside this hall and there's no much of visual object. You go to the corner, you only see the wall. It won't make much of a challenge. So you can keep the coin there, and while turning, you can still maintain the mindfulness. So that is why you make that kind of situation, no much of visual objects. The generic objects are there, and you take the challenge of changing the posture, and you find it somewhat easier to maintain the mindfulness that you brought up to this point while turning, and again, so you can see fair amount of continuity is there. Once that is okay, once that is assured, then take a chance, go outside, and amidst of all the kind of thing, don't take it as a burden, it's a kind of a challenge. And that is how you are training your mind from one track to two tracks. And challengeful, and slowly, slowly, when it's going there, the multitasking. So much of things happen, but if you know your priority, if you know your undefiled state, and if you know the capacity of your resilience, you will see one day by day, you can develop it in such a way, unbelievable. That is why the Malunke Buddha says, kiyati no pachiyati. Earlier, it is a reason for you to acquire or infested with defilements. Now each time you develop kind of a skillfulness, you develop kind of a momentum, you develop kind of a acceleration, let the mind jump here and there. But I am only thing is not to pull it back, but to diagnose bookkeeping or focus the searchlight, that is enough. Immediately mind come back. As I mentioned yesterday, it happens in four stages. First, understand now I am no more at home, I am off. And second thing is not hiding, not underestimate, don't become guilt. You understand that will distract you. Instead, you understand now I am no more in the leg, but in the visual object. And Sarathi Vivarathi clearly understand that is none of my business. It happened. It is not my willful action. It is not my volitional thing. And then Uttani Karoti, he understands, earlier I used to regret, now I have no regret. I know that regret and all the thing make turbulence and return journey, this resilience will be frictional. Without a friction you can come, and verily the Buddha mentioned all these merits, skillfulness will be surpass something, come to the peak if you can tell it to another person. Otherwise, still you are not gaining the maximum amount of result. So in the discussions, in the question and answer, in the interviews, you can paint this picture. This is my object, and how do I know I am in this object, in the primary object? Because I know the pressure from the heel to the toes or to the left leg to the right leg, how the pressure is changing. So you have to start the story from that. And whenever mind is about to jump or once jumped, must clearly tell, now I am no more in this tactile sensation either. I mean the visual object or sound or smell or taste or other sensitivity of the body. So you have to clearly indicate, this is the way my mind is. And then, knowing that, can you trace or can you verifiably say, is it your intentional jump into that object or it is involuntarily happening? And equally one can challenge, the coming back process happen intentionally or just like a pulled rubber, once released it come back to its own original shape. Likewise, by just knowing that it's no more in the secure place, no more in its domain, no more it is in the neutral place, and its coming back process, it's beautiful. That coming back process has no femininity and masculinity. That process never understand whether you are educated or not. That never understand whether you are rich or poor. It's a human or endowment, birthright. And when it is happening, when you come back to and see the, your normal tactile sensation is welcoming. It's never looked down at you. When you come back at home, you went home is very peaceful. And very that understanding give me a real rejuvenation and I would say self-sympathy. You're ready to sympathize yourself. And that is so relieving. Such a person definitely can sympathize another person because he knows the mechanism. Then you understand people are doing wrong things, even though we are attributing that at particular person, it is something happening due to the cause and effect. But if you wish to hit him or find fault with him, you have to attribute the soul to him or her. Then only you can be judgmental and punish him, or capital punishment or imprisonment or whatever may be. But see, when you are judging other people and when you are judging yourself, there's a complete two sets of rules. Utterly unfair, bias. The moment you sympathize yourself, you develop such a broadness in your mind, you try to understand the other person than judgmental, unassuming way. And that is the lasting thing. That is the way we can be human. That's the way we can have equality among everyone. And you can understand the Buddha mind. Understand the enlightened being. That's the way it happened. So you have that character. You are born Buddhist, born Buddha. Born enlightened, but skillfully you don't know how to verify it, how to assure it. How to second this idea. So therefore, nothing like try and please try. That is the remark I would like to say and would like to sum up the talk today. Thank you very much for listening.